Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We will recap Super Bowl 50 between the Broncos and the Panthers as the Broncos defeated the Panthers 24-10. We'll get reaction on that front. We'll also take your phone calls on 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. And we want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Well, it was certainly a defensive-minded game yesterday, Paul. I don't think I'm going out on a limb in terms of summing it up from that perspective. What Denver's front seven did to Carolina's offensive line was basically a continuation of what we saw in the AFC Championship against Brady and company.
You know, I heard a number this morning, Lance, and it was by one of your associates on Sirius, mentioning that when number one defenses get to the Super Bowl, they are 10-2 in terms of winning the game.
In terms of record.
I mean, they say defenses build championships. There's a reason for it, right?
Absolutely.
And what we saw yesterday, a dominant performance by that Broncos front seven, which, by the way, we've talked about now, if not you, certainly with John, over the last couple of weeks, it was clear to me that going into the playoffs, the Broncos defense was the best individual unit of any team in the playoffs. I think that was very clear for weeks. They continued to prove that each and every game that they played and certainly put an emphatic exclamation point on that yesterday. I thought that the one thing that surprised me more than anything else, and by the way, I'm going to fess up going into the game. In fact, I even messaged Anita. I thought it was going to be 23-20 Panthers. That was my predicted score because I thought ultimately Cam Newton's legs, I thought he would maintain the composure that he showed this season and that his legs would make some big plays enough to get them into field goal range enough at times. But also, in addition to that, you never expected four Panthers turnovers.
Well, that was the big key. Yeah, absolutely. They were moving the football, and they were getting in position. Plus, let's not forget the Graham Gano missed field goal, too. You know, that's 3 points off the board. But I felt Carolina, at times, was able to solve this Denver defense, despite the fact that Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware and just about everybody was having a field day. They were able to overcome those obstacles, but the Achilles heel was every time they would make some progress and start to get into Denver territory, they coughed up the football, which was very rare because Carolina had the number one turnover differential in the National Football League this season. They led the NFL in takeaways. They had 39, and they were up there in terms of giveaways, meaning on the low side. They protected the football quite well. So, you know, that got off script yesterday. Denver wasn't necessarily up there in takeaways this season.
Correct.
But they did a nice job being opportunistic, essentially taking a page out of Carolina's playbook.
And what really surprised me a little bit was the fact that, you know, I'd been doubting Carolina all year long, and I know we did talk about this last week.
We did, indeed, yeah.
And I said, look, I saw this team play the Giants firsthand, and I was not thinking that this is a championship team. Well, the problem was they kept winning, and they only got beaten once all season by Atlanta. And so at some point, you got to open your eyes and say, well, maybe they really are as good as people think they are. Maybe I'm the one who's mistaken. Well, guess what? It was apparent from the very first possession of the game that Cam Newton was the pre-2015 Cam Newton yesterday. The MVP Cam Newton that played all year long was the fallacy. That was the facade. The Cam Newton that we had seen the previous 4 or 5 years of his career, the guy who was indecisive, the guy who was not taking the bull by the horns, the guy who made a number of poor, inaccurate throws for pass completions that should have been made in his sleep, but he was missing guys. That's the Cam Newton that I've always thought was overrated because people got so enamored with his physical skills that they wanted to boost him up to become the next superstar quarterback. Well, I've seen flaws in this guy's game for years. just like I've seen them in Russell Wilson's game. And so yesterday, it was like, is the Cam Newton that I believe is inside that helmet going to show up? Or is the Cam Newton that's been kicking the league's butt all season going to continue to show up? And you know what? The other Cam Newton, the pre-2015 Cam Newton, showed up. And then, of course, what he pulled in the postgame presser afterwards was a disgrace and an embarrassment, not only to the Carolina Panthers, but to everybody in the National Football League.
Well, in fairness, two things based on what you said. Number one, I don't think one performance takes away from a player's overall performance on the season.
He's still the MVP of the league in 2015,
correct,
and I would never take that away from him because he helped them get to 15-1.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think you got to put things in perspective.
No question.
He did struggle yesterday. I would say part of it was inaccurate throws. On top of that, Paul, let's not forget the wide receiving core had a very rough performance for Carolina overall. A lot of drop passes, Jericho Cotchery, Ted Ginn, the list goes on.
They didn't help him.
That did not certainly help his cause, and they really weren't able to establish the run like they had been able to do throughout the season. Carolina had the number one rushing attack.
Well, you know, the thing that was odd, though, is that yesterday, I don't know, maybe as you were watching the game, I know I certainly felt it, I kept waiting for those explosive, busted play runs that Cam had been pulling out of his pocket all season long. Didn't really do it yesterday. He had a couple of decent runs.
A few runs, yeah. But
couple
nothing,
of decent runs.
Nothing game-changing.
No.
Yeah.
No. And look, if you saw them play the Giants, you remember, he had two huge runs.
Play breaks down, and then he takes it himself.
That broke the Giants' back. And he'd been doing that to people all year long. And I kept waiting for that to happen yesterday. And it wasn't in him. I really believe the moment was too big for him. I really believe that. Well, I know he's 26 years old, and I'm hearing people excuse, you know, I'm getting people on Twitter saying, oh, he's still a young guy. No, I'm not cutting him any slack. He's been in this league for a handful of years already. He just won the MVP of the league. No slack. This was the Super Bowl, boy, you know, my friend. Come on.
But here's the thing, Paul. I mean, you do bring up an interesting
bummer
point. When we tend to say it was too big of a stage, or is it more of a reflection of how effective the Denver defense played? I mean, let's not eliminate there's the other end of the spectrum here, that Denver's defense was so effective and so well-disciplined that Cam could not find the type of openings that he did all throughout the course of the season.
They were the best unit going in. We talked about that before. But it just seemed to me that when Cam Newton needed to rise above the fray, and you know, I talk about elite quarterbacks. How many times have we said this over the course of the last 10 years? And remember when the controversy came out about Eli Manning, is he elite?
Oh, it always comes up.
And I always said, for me, and I want you to define this as well, an elite quarterback, to me, is not only a quarterback who, for the most part, performs at a very high level, but he's the quarterback who on a somewhat regular basis, doesn't have to do it all the time, but at least on a semi-regular basis, has to be able to rise up and drag his team along to victory. Even when it looks like everything else isn't working right, he's the guy who is able to somehow, some way, pull their butts out of the fire and get a win. Now, John Elway did that a billion times. Brady's done it a billion times. Eli's done it a ton of times. Ben Roethlisberger has done it a ton of times. To me, if you've got a quarterback who maybe three or four times in a given season can take a team on his shoulders, and when everything else says that they should win the game, but they win the game because he did something to make it happen, that's what makes a guy elite for me. Maybe you have a different definition.
No, I think that's a fair synopsis. I think when you have an immense amount of obstacles and you need your star player to overcome those obstacles, that defines you as elite. Absolutely. And crunch time, how you deliver in the clutch, too, I think also elevates you to that elite level.
Cam Newton is not elite.
Well, based on yesterday's performance.
Based on his whole career. To this point, his career has not proven him to be elite.
And in fairness, though, once again, while he has had a few years in the league, the sample size for some of the guys that you named, though, I think there's a lot more substance there.
No doubt.
And a lot more opportunities on the big stage compared to what Cam has had to
deal with.
That
is true.
And the other thing is, when you look at this season for Carolina, Cam has had a number of luxuries. First of all, he played with an extremely opportunistic defense. And that's why they had a number of early leads. He didn't have to play too much from behind. I thought what happened yesterday, and maybe this helps create more of a narrative for Cam, the Panthers as a whole, specifically on offense, Paul, were put in uncharted territory yesterday. The script this season was we're going to jump on the opposition, we're going to build the big leads, and then we're going to hold you off.
Right.
And the way you do that is because you have a very stingy defense that can win games single-handedly. You have a running game that has done wonders for your offense in terms of time of possession. And Cam has helped elevate, in fairness, the play of the wide receivers around him. Because remember, when Kelvin Benjamin went down, and you looked at this group on paper, you know, this is not a bunch of household names. Ted Ginn, Corey Brown, Jericho Cotchery. That's why, it, by far, he's the MVP this season.
Without a doubt.
Because he's a big reason why
the level
of play around him improved. But once again, I think everybody was put in an uncomfortable position yesterday where they had not been put in throughout the regular season. How many games has Carolina played from behind? I remember the Seattle game earlier this season where they had that late touchdown to Greg Olsen. This was early in the season. It was like week three or week four. Indianapolis, the game that went to overtime. Okay, they were tested. They lost to Atlanta. Other than that, majority of these games, they at least were in the lead. They were close, but they led. They were playing from behind for this entire game.
So then basically what you're telling me is, much like I've said about Russell Wilson many times, he's more of a product of the system and the circumstances than he is an elite quarterback. See, you can be a star quarterback without being elite. And I really think that's what Cam Newton is. He's a star, but he's not elite.
I haven't seen enough from him because of the opportunities that have been presented to him to at least qualify him even in that elite conversation. I think he's a star quarterback. I think he has the potential and upside to be a franchise quarterback for the long-term future, Paul. But you want to talk about elite, when you throw out Big Ben, when you throw out Eli, when you throw out Tom Brady, I need multiple hands.
Rodgers obviously
too,
elite.
But multiple hands to explain regular season games and postseason games where they've been put in a position where maybe everything around them hasn't gone right according to plan, and they have had to pull their teams out of those situations. Cam, I don't think there's enough substance right now to even qualify him in that stage. That's my biggest issue.
Well, you know what? Let's see what happens when he's around for 10 years.
Correct.
And he's put more of a body of work on paper. And then we can make a judgment in retrospect and decide what place he falls in during this current era of quarterbacks. But to this point, all I'm saying is to this point, Cam Newton is not elite. Now, whether or not he deserves more opportunities to show that, you know, that goes without saying. There'll be plenty of games and plenty of years for Cam Newton to develop, mature, and show, if he is elite, that he is. Well, to this point, he hasn't shown it.
Here's another interesting quarterback.
Great talent, by the way.
Absolutely.
Great talent.
Nobody's denying that.
No one's denying that. And
too.
I want to make that very clear. Yeah. He is the 2015 MVP for a reason. Tremendous talent. But it's not the same thing as being an elite quarterback.
I'm curious your thoughts. I'm going to throw out another quarterback's name. And he was put to me in positions where he had to help out his team at a very young age, right when he arrived in the league. Joe Flacco. How would you categorize Joe Flacco?
Joe Flacco is not elite. It's a
because
star quarterback.
A lot of people would say he was put in a lot of those positions, big stage, very early in his career, and more often than not delivered.
I think
opposite, I would argue, of Cam.
To this point, Joe Flacco is a star quarterback. He's not an elite quarterback, for me.
I think he's at that borderline area. That's where I would say.
And that's fine. That's fine. But he hasn't graduated to that penthouse yet. He's not all the way through the door where I can say he belongs in the club. Not there.
The one thing, and we will open up the phone lines here in a second at 201-939-4513. The biggest takeaway of yesterday's game, and as much as a lot of the focus is on Cam and Carolina had the number one offense, struggled, let's not forget the Panthers' defense, I thought, did a really nice job against the Denver offense, too. And the biggest difference was Denver capitalized off of its takeaways.
Yes.
Whereas Carolina could not capitalize off the takeaways.
Although, how many times was I saying to myself and on the Twitter, Denver settles for three. Denver settles for three. Denver settles for three. Where have I seen that before?
Of course.
Yeah. You know, to be honest with you, the way this game unfolded, the Broncos should have had at least a 10-point lead several times during the course of the game. And this should not have come down to the last 6 or 7 minutes of the fourth quarter. It should not have. Denver, for as poorly as their offense produced, this game still should not have been in question. This should have been wrapped up easy by early fourth quarter for them.
They scored the touchdown off the early takeaway where they had the strip sack from Von Miller. after that, it was really field goals, good field position, led to a punt, and that's why it was a 13-7 game. And I said at the half, I said, if Denver allows Carolina to hang around, all you need to do is turn the ball over, and then this game turns quickly.
Or 165-yard Newton scramble, and all of a sudden, boom!
But Carolina's offense could never pull that out.
No, and again, Newton never showed me any of those improvisational big plays that we had seen during the course of the regular season. I want to give you a number, by the way. Cam Newton, and I know that one loss record certainly is not the only way to gauge this. Heck no, the Giants haven't made the playoffs the last few years, and Eli's one loss record isn't great either. Although his body of work he has shown over the course of a long period of time, he is elite. Cam Newton's one loss record, though, 6-10, 7-9, the 12-4 season, fine, 5-8-1, and then, of course, this year, where, in my mind, an overrated Panthers team went 15-1 and allowed the defense, basically, to dictate and make things very easy for the quarterback to where he didn't have to do a whole lot to bring this team back. So his lifetime record is 45-32-1, which is fine, but he's getting a huge boost from this season when everything went right for them. Before I make any judgments on what Cam Newton is as a quarterback on the whole for his career, we're going to need to see a lot more. And I think that's fair. Right now, though, I can't put him in the penthouse with the elites.
Well, remember, early in his career, though, he didn't have the luxury of this type of a defense, too. And as we've pointed out, if there's anything we can learn, and we talked about this before we came on, in comparison, just to bring this conversation back to the Giants' perspective, if there's anything you can learn in terms of previous Super Bowl winners, while having an explosive offense is great, you still need those other facets of the football team, the defense and the special teams, which was showcased last night.
You know, if there's one thing that you got to take away from that game, it's that a ferocious pass rush is the one element of football that can overcome virtually anything else that you don't have on the field. I mean, think about this. We've seen it time and time again. The Broncos did it yesterday. Remember when Baltimore crushed the Giants in Super Bowl 35? It was about a ferocious front seven that the Ravens had. God knows Trent Dilfer, good guy, but, you know, not a great quarterback.
Defense did a lot of the heavy lifting.
Okay. We've seen it happen time and time again. When the Giants beat Brady in 42, it was really the defense that did that. It wasn't, I mean, I know that Tyree had the catch and Burris had the winning touchdown.
The pass rush was the X factor.
The pass rush did it. So, again, going back to that number, the number one defense in the NFL is 10-2 in the Super Bowl. The evidence is pretty clear. I mean, if you have a ferocious front seven, you're going to be able to put a Band-Aid on a lot of other wounds and cover up a lot of things that you don't have and still win the game. And I think that's the one thing, if you want to kind of connect this storyline to the Giants, that's the one thing that I think every Giant fan had to wince at as they were watching this game yesterday. They're looking at this incredibly dominant front seven that the Broncos put on the field, a ferocious and just brutal pass rush. And you're saying, wow, I remember when the Giants had that and haven't seen it for a while. And I'm sure that had to go through every Giants fan's minds. And that's probably more than anything else what you need to see fixed on this team moving forward, so that they can get after the quarterback like what the Broncos did yesterday. And when you see that again, you're going to know the Giants have a real chance to win something.
Well, and also considering what you just touched upon, the common element in the Giants' Super Bowl runs was the existence of the pass rush and the ferocious pass rush that also came alive late in the season and extended into the regular season, in the postseason, excuse me. And also, the best way to describe last night's game, Denver had 194 total yards of offense, which was the lowest by any Super Bowl winner in history.
1-for-14 third down conversions. What a joke.
How do you make up for that, Paul, though? How do you cover up the issues on offense or the fact that you didn't light up the scoreboard? You do it with the defense and the special teams. The punt return by Jordan Norwood.
Huge.
And then on top of that, 7 sacks between Cam and Ted Ginn.
The pass rush was phenomenal. And the pass rush, and the reason we're not even talking about the 4 turnovers is because the pass rush created that.
That led
to the can't really get the turnovers without the ferocious front seven.
Von Miller led to a touchdown with his pass rush.
No question. So I'm not even going to talk about that because that's a given. The turnovers are inherent. They're going to come when you just beat the living crap out of the quarterback.
No argument there. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants chat. You want to weigh in on Super Bowl 50. Offseason has officially begun, so we'll also get into some Giants topics as well. Greg is in Virginia. He gets us going on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Greg, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Greg. How's everything with you?
Good. I'm well. I wanted to one thing I took from the game last night, is aside from, you know, the obvious about the pass rush and everything, was just on Cam Newton. You know, I really appreciate Eli a lot more after just seeing what I saw yesterday from a player like Cam Newton, just as far as the professionalism. Eli would never act like Cam Newton did after a loss. It's shameful. It's really embarrassing, actually, that a 26-year-old man going to get in front of camera and act like that. And I just appreciate the fact that we have a quarterback who is a legitimate professional. But I found something interesting. With that last drive, with about 4 minutes left, Cam Newton fumbled, you know, the last one. And for a split second, you got real insight into somebody's personality and character. Because his first initial reaction was to not go after the ball. And there's 4 minutes left, and you're down by six in the Super Bowl. Thomas Davis is out there playing with 19 pins in his arm, and you're going to look out for yourself because you don't want to go lay out for the ball.
You know what's wild about that? I've seen the replay on Twitter. Folks have posted that video in slow motion, and at first, you know, you do a double take. Yeah, you do a double take at first. You're like, really? Did he not dive for that ball? Did it look like? And you're like, wow.
He did one of these hesitations where it looked like he was going, then all of a sudden,
yeah.
And they're down by six.
You know,
to go make his legacy, go make that drive.
Inexplicable, right?
Yeah, one possession game still.
Once he's put to the test.
Inexplicable. I don't know where that came from.
Into the person he is. Like, it's one of those moments where, like, if there's a fire in a building. Are you the guy who's pushing out the old women out of the way to get out of the building, or are you the one helping people? See, it's a real one of those split seconds where you actually get to see who you are. And Cam Newton is who we thought he is. He's selfish.
Well, Greg, once again, you know, I don't think one play and one game in a player's career defines that athlete. And in fairness, to bring it back to the Giants, you know, Odell Beckham went through, you know, a very tough situation against Carolina earlier this season. To say that that's going to define his career and define him as an individual, to me, is a little misleading.
Not in the Super Bowl.
Well, but you know what? But here's the thing, Greg. We tend to magnify things when it's the Super Bowl. And as somebody that's been in locker rooms after games, okay, and I may be generalizing here. If you think that Cam is the only athlete that has ever behaved like that or given one-word answers after a very painful loss, that would be extremely misleading because it happens more often than not in locker rooms across the National Football League.
You know what's interesting?
It's magnified because it was the Super Bowl.
Let me go back to the video. Let me go back to the video, though, in terms of what Lance is saying about how you can define a guy by one play. Remember the Jets' Ken O'Brien? And there was a scramble, I believe, against the Miami Dolphins at the old Giants Stadium where he got defined by one play in which he wimped out on a scramble near the goal line. And instead of taking the hit and trying to get into the end zone, he basically wussed out and came up short of the goal line. And every Jets fan that I knew wanted to just hang him by his toes because, hey, wait a minute. You got a chance to score a touchdown, but you didn't want to get hit, so you wimped out short of the goal line? That play defined Ken O'Brien for every Jets fan that I know for the remainder of his career because they felt as though he didn't ball out for it. I remember Joe Namath many, many years ago, back in like 1973, 74. He wound up chasing after a Detroit Lion in a preseason game after a turnover, and he blew out his knee. Needed another surgery, wound up missing like half the season, really destroyed the Jets' hopes that year. And I remember Namath being questioned after it happened. And his comment was, if you're not going to go all the way, man, why go at all? Because he felt that as a competitor, you had to show if you were on the field with that uniform on, you had to show that you were all in on every play. You were getting paid to do a job, and you had to do everything you can to maximize your ability to get the thing done. That kind of goes to what you're saying about Cam Newton on that play.
You got to put your money where your mouth is. You know, like, it's cool to have all your players on your team, on your cleats or whatever, and say you're all about them, you're doing selfies on the sideline or whatever. But when there's 4 minutes left and the ball's loose in the Super Bowl, are you going to lay out or are you not?
You know, I think the problem is
– proof is in the pudding.
And thank you for the call. We appreciate it. I think part of the problem is here is that Cam Newton is a very polarizing figure.
Oh, without a doubt, especially the last few weeks.
And so, you know, there are people who will absolutely not be able to tolerate him in any way, shape, or form. Then there are people who are going to defend him to the end of the universe because they just think he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And the problem is that because he's so polarizing, nobody can stand in the middle and say, okay, he's good at this or he has this or he deserves to be the MVP, but he's not an elite quarterback. You try to slice it down the middle and you try to explain to people what's good and what's bad, and they don't want to hear about it. They either love him and think he's awesome, or they automatically can't stand him and think he's a bum and just absolutely forget about it.
There's not much middle ground.
There's no middle ground on him.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to take the middle ground. Nobody wants to recognize what he does great and what he doesn't do so great. Because the people who want to glorify him, they love his showboating, they love his talent, and they think he's the next, quarterback of the future. I mean, that's it.
Well, that's why it's important to put things in perspective. And I think that while we're all focusing on Cam and his behavior off the field specifically, which the conversation has become, and you've been in a lot of locker rooms too, Paul.
No question.
Over the course of the regular season and postseason. You've seen athletes after tough losses who have not necessarily shown the utmost professionalism.
I have seen all kinds of reactions after losses in big spots. I'm not going to name this player, but I can remember after the Giants lost to the Rams in the playoffs in 89, Flipper Anderson. And I remember a Giants veteran sitting in his locker openly crying and crying and crying. You would have thought his dog had just got run over by a car. He was openly weeping hysterically because he could not believe that they had lost and it hurt so much. Now, the one thing I will say, he had his grief, he had his moment, but at least he wasn't rude and obnoxious to anybody. And he didn't act unprofessional about it. If you came to his locker and you saw him like that, you were like, okay, I'm going to be human about this. I'm not going to talk to this guy right now. He needs a chance to compose himself.
To calm down.
I also saw Lawrence Taylor, okay? I've seen Lawrence Taylor after a loss, okay, sit at his locker in full gear, so devastated by a loss that he would sit there and glare at the wall and not move for 5 minutes. And not a soul came within 5 feet of him.
Because they knew.
You knew.
Let him be.
Let him be. Now, I can appreciate both of those reactions. And you know what? In neither one of those scenarios did the player give the media the quotes that they needed to write their stories. But there's an understanding from a human being perspective. Hey, this guy is in his space right now, or this guy is in his devastation right now, let him be. My feeling with Cam Newton is very simple. He's the face of the Panthers. He was the MVP of the league, the face of the league. He owes everybody a lot more professionalism and a lot more leadership and class than what he showed after the game last night. And I would think that anybody in the Panthers organization is probably wincing at what he did. Now, if it means he's got to take another 5 minutes to compose himself before he goes out to the podium, then take another 5 minutes. Seriously, take another 5 minutes if that's what it's going to mean. And I don't care about the newspaper guy's deadlines. Tough. If it means he needs 5 more minutes to get himself
calm down,
under control,
collect your thoughts and so forth,
then do it.
I don't know what – I'm curious. I didn't necessarily have a stopwatch with me after the game, how quickly he spoke to the media following the game. I'd be interested to see –
when they aired it on TV, I don't know if that was real time or if that was on delay.
Correct, exactly. That's why I'd be just curious to know, based on the point that you just raised. It was not a good look. I don't think anybody would necessarily disagree with that. But I think there's also the human element side of things. Unless you've been in a position where you've lost a game, where you've been in that situation, you got to step back and at least realize that. And I've heard from, you know, previous Super Bowl players. I think it was on the NFL Network last night. They had Marshall Faulk, Deion Sanders, and Michael Irvin. You had two guys who have never lost a Super Bowl. And then you had Marshall Faulk, who's been in a position where he lost a Super Bowl.
Sure.
Faulk was coming from the perspective, guys, I understand everybody's worked up, but until you're in those shoes, you don't really know what it feels like after the season builds up to that point, and now all of a sudden you're thrown into the fire. The other thing real quickly, Paul, I just wanted to throw out, and I don't know if there's any validity to this. I saw this morning, and I have an opportunity to read the article or listen to the audio. Supposedly Chris Harris of the Broncos, and I don't know if you saw this, he was talking right behind Cam simultaneously or something to that nature. And I think Chris Harris, this is, once again, I don't know if I have this exact, I thought they're saying that Chris Harris may have yelled out something while Cam was addressing the media.
To Newton
it
himself?
It was insensitive or something to that nature. Or he overheard something and that sort of rubbed Cam the wrong way. Once again, I'm not saying there's a legitimate excuse and I got to look more into this, but I think that may be now part of the narrative as well.
Well, if there were logistic problems where that became a little bit of a crossfire in terms of earshot,
correct,
then the league has to do a better job of making sure that does not happen.
The layout and so forth.
Okay. But I've seen many of guys lose important games, including Super Bowls, when the Ravens kicked the Giants' butt. Down in Tampa, I didn't have any problem with any of those guys after that game getting to the podium and talking about how they were destroyed. I mean, they were all there to face the music.
And so were Cam's teammates.
You know.
And that's what makes him look bad at
and,
that point.
Yeah.
Because Luke Kuechly and all those other guys
Josh
went
Norman,
up to the mic and spoke. I get
who
that.
Was another polarizing figure.
He got up to the mic and answered all the questions.
And, you know, he was down. He was dejected. But he conducted himself as a pro. And that's what you're supposed to do.
Well, and that's part of the growing up process.
Sure.
And you hope for Cam's sake that he'll look back at this, he'll reflect, and he'll realize, if I could do it again, 2020's hindsight, probably should have taken a few more minutes and should have tried to zoned out of everything else around me and at least answered the questions. Nobody's saying you got to give a play-by-play or a dissertation, but just go through it for the 5 or 10 minutes, walk off, and then obviously have an opportunity
and
to reflect.
We have not even mentioned the fact that Peyton Manning may have played his last NFL game.
Well, because this is what everybody with the media and the fans get involved in. I mean, that just puts the NFL landscape in perspective, Paul. It's much more interesting to talk about a polarizing figure than, you know.
Peyton. It is.
At the end of the day, Peyton may not be suiting up anymore. All right, speaking of chatter, let's get back to the phone lines. I know a lot of people want to weigh in.
Oh.
B-Lo is in New Orleans. I think he wants to weigh in on Peyton, so maybe he will be able to address that. What's happening, B-Lo?
What's going on, family?
What do you got for us?
I just want to say congratulations to Big Brother over there, Peyton Manning, you know. And I also want to congratulate Cam. He still had a phenomenal year, but like
sure
y'all
did.
Said
Indeed.
Earlier, he's not ready for the elite title on top of his name yet, you know. But I'm going to ask this question. I take it off the air. I don't want to hold up too much of y'all time. I know y'all got a busload of people waiting. But after seeing last night's Super Bowl, what y'all think about Eli taking a pay cut to help out the defense?
Well, I appreciate the phone call. I mean, I don't know about that. It really is based on speculation. And remember, things like that, it's all about the player's perspective. You know, there's two items to at least look at. It's the team's perspective and the player's perspective. And both entities have to meet each other halfway if you were to come to an agreement in any restructure of a contract and so forth. I'm not saying that it's out of the picture, but, I mean, that I don't know if is priority number one or the first thing on the list of items that they want to address this offseason. I think that the Giants, based on the numbers, are going to be in a very good, healthy financial position this offseason where they don't necessarily need to have everybody meet them halfway in the restructured zone. And, once again, appreciate the phone call, B-Lo, that they'll have enough flexibility to go out and pursue free agents.
You know, the one thing that I think we all seem to forget, and the fans do it especially, is that when you have your want list, it's got to be both ways.
Yeah. Player and the team have to meet each other.
We've all sat here and said, wouldn't it be great if they could sign this guy and this guy and this guy? And, oh, by the way, maybe there's enough money to do it. But now the player's got to cooperate and say, you know, I want to play there. And we all seem to forget that part of the equation.
Yeah, it's always, why did they go after this guy? Why does this guy not fit here? And it's maybe the guy just doesn't want to come.
I remember,
it's as simple as
Devin
that.
McCourty decided, I want to play with the Patriots. And I'm not leaving. Sometimes it happens.
And I'm sure a lot of those stories are going to come out now that we're going to get into the free agency type of period. And teams are also going to have an opportunity, by the way, to franchise key players, which would eliminate them from the market, too. Von Miller, supposedly, based on reports, he could be given the franchise tag for the Denver Broncos.
You know how many Giants fans on the street have come up to me and said, oh, they got to get Von Miller. They got to get Von Miller. And I keep saying, what makes you think the Broncos are letting them get away?
Yeah.
He's not going anywhere.
I think they're going to do everything they can to make sure they keep the Super Bowl MVP on the same roster. I'd be curious, just from a historical perspective, Paul, how many Super Bowl MVPs left the team right after winning that award?
Wow.
Whether or not that's even ever happened in the history of the NFL.
I don't think
so. And I'm not
so.
Saying you know the answer off the top of your head. I'd be curious to know if that's ever happened in the history of the NFL.
I know that Super Bowl MVPs a year or two later
but I'm talking
we're gone.
About right that
you know guys like Larry Brown, Dexter Jackson, Timmy Smith. There've been guys who, you know, flamed out and were not much later on in their careers, but right after they won,
that being their last game in that uniform.
Woo.
I mean, it's clearly we'd have to look at the archives.
To change helmets, no. I mean, there were guys who were retired. But
well,
to change
but
helmets?
Again, I'm talking about change still in the
so.
NFL changing
I don't think
helmets.
So.
I think it's an extremely rare occurrence, if not at all. Has it ever happened? All right, Marco's in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Hi, guys.
How are we doing, Marco?
I'm doing well. I called up to talk about the running backs. And since I've been on hold, man, so many different things you guys have brought up have, have you know, given me a lot of stuff to talk about. If you don't mind, I'll touch on them quickly. I think the Chris Harris thing you were alluding to, Lance, there was a curtain between them.
Correct.
It was a pretty big curtain. And Harris was on one side with the Denver media. Cam was on one side with, like, the national media. National media was probably on both sides. And Cam, a couple times as he was talking, he quieted down. And you can hear when the reporters are asking him, his attention, it was hard not to hear what was going on the other side of the curtain.
Well, but here's the thing, Marco, and I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you get the
sure.
sense, and once again, I need to hear it myself, and I don't want to necessarily rely on speculation. Did Chris Harris yeah. appear to say something that would have rubbed Cam the wrong way? Because that's what it seems like the narrative has been about recently.
Yeah. I don't know what he said, but when a reporter was even in the middle of asking a question, that's when Cam was – he looked like he was distracted and maybe not even hearing what the reporter was saying, and he kind of shrugged him off and said, guys, I'm done. So it's possible, and who knows? Cam could deny it and say that was true, or maybe he didn't want to sit there and talk to the media. You'll never know. But,
correct, yeah. But I think there is something there maybe that somebody may want to look into to
yeah.
at least have a complete picture of what happened in that postgame
sure.
presser.
Sure, I agree. Well, listen, the off-the-field stuff aside about Cam, just my opinion is, as a Giants fan, I think Eli, he sets the bar very high for me. But just as a fan looking at another quarterback, I think we're very, very quick right now to just this timeline that we're in, we want to break guys down right away. And if we don't like someone, we look at them right away to try to find something that we don't like. And I think people did that with Odell Beckham this year. Maybe some people that were getting sick of some of the celebrations and they were waiting for some things to go wrong with him, and they crushed him. And no one wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt after that game. Even when Tom Coughlin was saying what a good kid he was. You know, Michael Strahan wasn't always great after games or with the media during the week. And he was a leader of the team at the time. So I just think with Cam, and I want to get to my question, I think maybe not a leap because this is his first year doing it, but, God, man, if you look at his resume, everything he's done up until this point, rookie of the year, number one draft pick, national championship, Heisman Trophy, and now he comes in MVP, and he went against last night maybe the best defense since that 2000 Ravens defense. You'd like to see him do a little bit more, especially on that fumble like the fan was saying before, but I'm okay with it. Really.
Well, you got to
okay
give the Broncos defense credit, and that's what I said. Plus, here's the other thing, and I've heard this a lot on Twitter and just having conversations with my colleagues about how the Panthers weren't tested enough this season, and this was a rude awakening. First of all, they went up against Seattle and Arizona each of the previous two rounds of the postseason. Seattle was number two in defense. Arizona was number five.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear that Cam has not been able to solve good defenses. He has.
Absolutely.
Denver is just in a league of its own, as we saw yesterday.
I have two running back topics, and I'll hop off after this so you guys could take more calls. Maybe one that you might want to touch on down the line. I've always been interested when it comes to the Hall of Fame. I'm not old enough to have seen Gale Sayers play running back, Paul. Maybe I don't know if you did or
I did.
You know a lot about him. But
although he was kind of beaten up by the time I remember watching him.
Yeah, well, my understanding is he didn't play a long time in the league.
No.
So I'm curious if his body of work could ever measure up to what Tiki Barber did, and if there's a Hall of Fame argument to be made there if you're comparing the two. And maybe you touch on that. And then the second thing is more relevant to our situation now. Andre Williams, I was on a few years ago listening during the draft, and Paul and John and Paul, you were so pumped up when the Giants took Andre Williams. I want to know how you feel about him now, and how do you think he fits in going forward? Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Let me go with Andre Williams first. I thought it was a great pick in the fourth round. I still think that fundamentally Andre Williams has a lot of talent, a lot of skills, and I do believe that, again, his maturing process and his growth process has been stunted by the fact that the Giants have not had a power-blocking offensive line that has suited his style. At the moment, certainly this past season, his style and the Giants' style did not mesh very well at all. And so it looked like a disaster, and I totally get that. I still believe Andre Williams has a wealth of talent and still believe that he could be a very productive back in this league. So I'm still behind him. I have not given up on Andre. Look, he is not Darrell Scott, okay? Let me make something very clear. He is not Darrell Scott. Andre Williams can play in the National Football League. Now, having said that, the other comment you wanted to make about Newton, we have here the Big Lead, which is one of the reputable sites that does do a lot of media criticisms and media stories and reports of that nature. They are saying that Newton cut his post-game press conference short. It appears that there was something said by Chris Harris, the Denver corner, within earshot. And the quote was, Harris said, supposedly, again quoting, "Load the box, force you all to throw the ball," Harris said within earshot of Newton. "Can you throw the football? That was the game plan." Well, I got to be honest with you. If that's what made this kid,
that doesn't sound terrible.
26 years old, and I'm mocking when I say kid. 26 years old. He's not a kid. Now, if an 8-year-old hears that, gets his feelings all hurt, boo hoo, boo hoo. Maybe he cries to his mother. At 26 years old, that statement is going to force you to walk off the podium.
I wonder though.
That.
As Marco, the last caller, I wonder if that was the only comment or it was the buildup of maybe there were a few other things that were said and this was the only thing that the media picked up on. Once again, I think right now it's sort of an incomplete story. We're getting pieces here, but the pieces
maybe there's
of the
more.
Puzzle have not been totally
I hope together. There's more for Cam's sake because there's no justification so far from anything I've seen that allows him to conduct himself the way that he did in any event. And as far as the other point he made earlier, there was another point he made at the beginning of his call.
Well, he did cover Cam, and he did cover Andre Williams. Maybe I'm drawing blanks here. I know there was a lot. Marco even said that. We spoke about so much.
No, I know.
He was going over
I know.
All
well,
across the board.
Maybe we'll remember later.
Correct.
Keep
yes,
going.
Let's move along on the phone lines. We'll also get to some of your tweets. I know somebody put up on Twitter, they asked a question. I can't find the tweet right now, but I do remember the exact question was, when you look at the Denver defense, obviously Von Miller gets a lot of the focus because he's a pending free agent, but there are a few other free agents. Who would be a potential target, realistic target for the Giants outside of, obviously, the Von Miller? The two that I'll throw out, Malik Jackson and Danny Trevathan, I think at least realistically. But once again, we don't know what Denver's mindset is, what the player's mindset is, but they're not the Von Millers of the world, I guess is what I'm
no.
saying.
No, Von Miller is elite.
Correct. Those are two realistic names that, you know, perhaps they want to test the market. There, all of a sudden, their profiles were raised because of how they performed in the Super Bowl. Malik Jackson was active on that touchdown strip by Von Miller. Those are two names, I think, in particular that you could look at.
Let me generalize and make this very, very simple. Any impact player from the front seven who decides he's going to be a free agent and take his wares outside of his current team, that would be a gentleman who I think the Giants would at least want to explore and maybe talk to and at least get out their personnel files and take a look and see what does this guy bring to the table because maybe that conversation might bear some fruit.
We want to remind fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play.
Marco says, the Gale Sayers and Tiki comment. That was the other comment he made.
About the Hall of Fame and everything.
Let me tell you something about Tiki Barber. Tiki Barber, because of his fumbleitis, okay, did a lot of damage to the way people perceive him. If you'll recall, he was a very, very productive back, even during the last several years while Fossil was here, and he wasn't going to the Pro Bowl. And that's because he was averaging 9 fumbles a season. Tom Coughlin gets here, and in the next 3 years that he plays under Coach Coughlin before he retires, he had 9 fumbles combined because Coach Coughlin fixed him, him and Gerald Ingram, the running backs coach. And by the way, Tiki Barber started going to the Pro Bowl once that got fixed. So that's something that's going to be held against Tiki. His early problem.
Was in the later stages of his
right.
career.
Right. So his fumbleitis problem is certainly going to be held against him. I also believe when you look at Gale Sayers, you're looking at a guy who was a phenomenal kickoff returner also. I mean, he could break open a game on special teams on a kickoff return at any time. And if you've ever wanted to go back and look at some of the old NFL films of him, it's remarkable some of the stuff that he was able to do. And Tiki was certainly not that kind of special teams threat. So that's another whole issue entirely where Sayers brought another component to the table that Tiki did not have.
The versatility. Let's head back to the phone lines. Abdul is in Minnesota. Abdul, what's happening?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Doing well, Abdul. What do you have for us?
Good. Two things. I didn't watch a lot of other football this year besides the Giants because of work and kids and all that stuff. So watching football during the playoffs, it was eye-opening how bad our defense was. It was just last night. Watching a pass rush and the influence of a pass rush, watching safeties that could actually cover, watching linebackers that could actually cover tight ends, it was just like almost the Giants played a different league in a different league than these guys do. And it just shows us how far we have to come to reach to be competitive because I don't really know any players on the Giants roster could even crack the starting 11 for Denver.
You know what? What you saw yesterday, I mean, that had to give you memories of the 2007 front seven that the Giants put out there on the field in Arizona, though. In terms of the front four, the 50-something sacks, you know, by the defense, the linebackers who were really good on the blitz.
I saw a linebacker turn around and cover Cautry down the field.
Great stuff.
Yeah, Von Miller was out there in coverage even yesterday.
Is that Von Miller?
He was
a linebacker covering a receiver step for step. You know, it was just people covering and being with us. It was just eye opening the level of talent that. And it just wasn't it just wasn't yesterday. It was throughout the playoffs. Watching these playoff teams. Seattle had good defense. Arizona had good defense. You know, it was just these teams that had good defenses out there that actually had linebackers and safeties and a pass rush. It was just, you know, as I said, after watching a whole year of Giants defense basically exclusively and switching on and watching good defenses, it was kind of eye opening. And I, you know, we have our work cut out for us, and hopefully, you know, we have a plan A, B, and C when it comes to acquiring some talent this year. Second question was. Can you please explain to me how that catch by Cautry wasn't a catch?
Yeah, well, I still don't understand that.
I don't understand. What is a catch?
It's a good question.
I have no dog in the race. I don't really care if we won last night. But it's just kind of frustrating when you see a play that could, you know, change the outcome of the game. Blown twice, you know, once on the field and once again in review. So I'll take the answer off the air there.
All right, Abdul, appreciate the phone call. He is alluding to the catch very early in the game,
yeah.
Or the non-catch, I should say, where Jericho Cotchery had it rolled over. The ball was, like, between his elbow and his stomach. And based on the replays that I saw, I did not see it hit the ground.
It looked good, and Mike Carey came on Fox and said it was good,
yes.
And then he didn't talk the rest of the
game.
Well,
the track record of Mike Carey also can be put up for debate in addition to that. It's one of those very close ones. According to, I think, what Dean Blandino came out on Twitter and said, they said based on the replays they saw, the ball did hit the ground, and then it was inconclusive whether or not, based on replays, that it was clean. At least that was the explanation. But I would agree with Abdul. It was very interesting that that play was not overturned, because all of the angles that I saw, it looked as if the ball cleanly was above the ground and on his body. And, you know, speaking of how momentum can swing, and I think Abdul brought up a good point, right after that play, if you recall, Paul, is the sack and the strip, which led to the Broncos' touchdown. So you all of a sudden make that a catch. You have the ball around midfield. Cam could still get sacked and lose the ball, of course. I mean, but it did change field position.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think everybody who saw the replay was pretty confident, especially, again, after Mike Carey came on and said, well, you know, that's going to be a catch. I was waiting for the official to say, potentially, well, it's inconclusive. I was thinking maybe that's their way out. But he came on and said, no, no catch. And didn't even go to the inconclusive part. Now, that seemed rather odd to me, because I thought there was a moment there where maybe you couldn't actually see the ball, that maybe his arm or his elbow or his body had potentially blocked a little part of it. I could have maybe accepted that as a bailout, but I thought it was a catch based on what I saw.
I was in agreement with you. That was my initial response. I said, I find it very hard to believe if they don't overturn it. And they wound up keeping it as it is. All right, let's head back to the phone lines here.
What do you got here?
Oh, actually, yes, we should mention this. Our great producer, Dave, did some research.
He's always so quick on the computer when we have a question.
So, believe it or not, there were two Super Bowl MVPs that left because they were pending free agents following the game. So Dexter Jackson, who you had brought up from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he wound up signing with the Cardinals. And then Desmond Howard, who won Super Bowl MVP with the Packers, one of the unique opportunities for a special teams player to win that award.
Sure.
He then went on to sign with the Oakland Raiders.
And that was in the months right after the game, Dave.
Yes.
Wow.
Okay. We looked at it, and I also confirmed it as well while we were chatting with players. Now, do you put both of those players, though, in the same ballpark as a Von Miller?
Well, the statement was a Super Bowl MVP, though.
MVP, you're right. That
and
was
so
the statement.
They qualified.
So they qualified. I guess I'm just trying to further the
but
conversation.
But they are not Von Miller caliber
maybe
players.
Maybe a Von Miller caliber player.
No, they are not.
But it has happened before, though, and good stuff by Dave. We appreciate
your research, Dave,
to throw that out to at least give you the full picture here. All right, Christian is in New York. We welcome him aboard here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Well, before I get talking about the Giants a little bit, I just wanted to say I was completely shocked by the way Cam Newton basically choked throughout that game, because I saw a good five or six throws where he was thrown down the field, he was never touched, and it just looked awful. I mean, I've never seen anything like that, but of course I'm a younger fan. But
well, Lance said before, and he's right, the receivers didn't help him out a whole lot in the game, but there were a number of very makeable throws that Cam Newton misfired on yesterday. I mean, he was again, the pre-2015 Cam Newton, who was more erratic than what we've been used to seeing this year.
And, Christian, we'll let you continue. One other thing that I wanted to add, if you look at Cam's performance, and we've talked about this even with Eli and some other quarterbacks, Paul, and you've heard this phrase, happy feet. I felt watching Cam yesterday, there were times where, as Christian noted, the pass rush wasn't coming to him, but the pass rush was so effective in getting to him more often than not that you sort of mentally feel as if they're closer than they appear to be, and you rush the throw. That's how effective the Denver pass rush was. Not only were they physically beating him up, I think mentally it got to him too.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I just had a one-word description for him overall, I would just say uncomfortable. But
fine.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
What I'm wondering is, with our run game this year, it really seemed as if we had four worthy starters on the offensive line. And any team with that many should be able to run the ball. So I'm wondering if maybe we're just not a great run-blocking team, or if maybe we didn't necessarily get out of the running backs what we should have.
Well, you have to understand something. The right guard spot was a bit of a mismatch because they had a number of guys play there. Jeff Schwartz had gone down. He was supposed to be the staple. And quite honestly, at right tackle, Marshall Newhouse is a much better, at least what he showed this year for the Giants, pass protector than he was a road grader and a run blocker. So really, really, if you look at the five men up front, the right guard and the right tackle spot were not high run blocking caliber guys. that's a big deal when you only have five up front and two-fifths of your guys aren't really going to pound the ball in the running game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess we had guys filling in a little too much, a little too often.
And, you know,
it just seemed like overall the line was an improvement from last year, but just the numbers in the running game didn't seem to jump at all.
Here's what I would say, and to be fair to the guys in the backfield and also to be fair to the caller earlier who was talking about, you know, Andre Williams in particular, I'm of the opinion that if Andre Williams, Rashad Jennings, Orleans Darkwa, if these guys were running behind the 2007 offensive line, you know, that, you know, remember those guys were blocking for the likes of Bradshaw and Jacobs.
And even Derek Ward.
Yeah, even Derek Ward, who had a really good season and wound up taking free agent money from Tampa. I think the running backs the Giants have now would probably be similar along the lines of production behind that line. I think this is more of a line situation than it was a lack of talent in the running back corps. That's simply my opinion. Hey, we all get guys wrong every once in a while. Maybe I'm wrong about them, but I think these guys can play.
Well, I think the lack of consistency in terms – we'll let you continue here in a second, Christian.
Okay,
I was just going to say the lack of consistency in terms of having the same personnel groupings on the field at the same time, it's not just unique to the Giants. We've seen this across the NFL landscape where that's going to impact the continuity of the O-line when you don't have the same guys on the field all the time.
And I would only add one thing. Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, Kareem McKenzie was so underrated. He was a very good right tackle. And a lot of people didn't appreciate just how good he was.
Well, but what made that group great, Paul, the one thing I'll say
consistency.
Is it's the fact that they were durable. The group was on the field consistently for that stretch of regular season games. So, I mean, the individuals were solid, don't get me wrong. But what gets overlooked a lot about that group, the deals, the McKenzies, and so forth, they played together. They were on the field every single week.
They were like a jar of peanut butter.
Exactly.
They were so smooth together.
They practiced during the week together. They were on the field on the weekend. When you do that consistently, you're going to get consistent play on the O-line.
Okay, we've held you up. Please go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Right now, there's two starting caliber left tackles on the team, and I've noticed that Will Beatty's contract is sort of a bargain based on what he actually gives you on the field. I mean, that's really great for both sides. And, you know, it's a tough situation because you got that guy locked up for really not too much money based on how good he is, but I'm not sure that he could play anywhere else besides left tackle. So it comes down to you basically want to have a great backup or, you know, maybe move Flowers to the right. You know, it just seems like Beatty has way too good of a deal to let go of him.
Well, I would only say this. Before you even discuss what the economics are involving Will Beatty, you have to figure out where he is health-wise. Remember, he had a rotator cuff situation after he had the pec thing rectified. We all thought he was going to be coming off the injured reserve list middle of the season, and he was going to help fortify that line. Remember, that was everybody's expectation. And then all of a sudden, uh-oh, wait a minute, rotator cuff isn't right, and he's lost for the season. We got to find out what's going on medically with him before you even think about the numbers and where he fits. We don't know.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, that's a little down the road, I see.
Thanks for the call.
Hi, Christian. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. When he spoke to the media after the season ended, Paul, he indicated that, at least from a mindset standpoint, he's coming in thinking about reclaiming that left tackle spot.
Right.
That's what we heard out of Beatty. Health-wise, he indicated he has every reason to believe he should be ready for spring workouts. But, you know, obviously that remains to be seen depending on how the rehab process goes. And that's going to determine, you know, his availability as the Giants offseason gets going. Well, we certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday moving forward. It'll be you and John Schmelk tomorrow. And I'll be back on Wednesday as we'll continue to field your phone calls, get to your tweets on a variety of different topics. We're now in off-season mode across the board in the National Football League. Could be a long time till we get to another meaningful football game, but we will certainly cover everything that's going to happen in the offseason. The combine's coming up later this month. We'll have full coverage there as well. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you on Tuesday. Have a good one.
All right, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.